evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio, Studio A, for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
All right, good day wherever you are in this world. I hope you're having a great day here listening to Revolution Radio. Everybody asks for this. Revolution Radio. Where the information never sleeps.
When you attend a funeral, it is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go, all suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char. And let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where I'm very pleased to have as my featured guest today a very popular guest on the show, Jack Mullen, who, among other attributes, assisted me with the False Flags and Conspiracies 2020 conference this past weekend. Before we turn to Jack and his take on the current situation here, I want to review what may well be the most important lawsuit to ever come before the Supreme Court, filed by Texas, where now, with the addition of Wyoming and Ohio, a total of 21 states are signed on or seek to be signed on to the Supreme Court lawsuit challenging the elections in Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, and Wisconsin. So the states altogether, as of this report, include Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, South Dakota, North Dakota, Arizona, Utah, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, Indiana, Missouri, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Tennessee, Alabama, Ohio, West Virginia, and Florida. Meanwhile, now officials in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Georgia have filed what some describe as ferocious condemnations of the Texas lawsuit. For example, the Pennsylvania filing describes a move by the Texas Attorney General and supported by President Trump as using a cacophony of bogus claims in support of a seditious abuse of the judicial process resting on a surreal alternative reality. Well, that makes it sound as though the whole lawsuit is just based upon bullshit, speculation, rumor. But having long offered courses in logic, critical thinking, and scientific reasoning, what I see here is the use of spin language that is not evidence, just a way of seeking to dismiss without actually considering what the case is all about. Now, there's a brilliant summary on my blog at jamesfetzer.org by Robert Madsen. This is from American Thinker, a journal, a publication. Excellent, I want to recommend. Very serious stuff written in very clear and accessible language. Here's what Madsen has to say, and then I'll bring in Jack to give us his critique. Texas claims a presidential election is held and is directed by government officials outside of the legislature in Pennsylvania, Georgia, Wisconsin, and Michigan, all flagrantly violated their own election laws by materially weakening and doing away with security measures. Further, according to the U.S. Constitution, the legislature, representing the citizens of each state, has absolute authority and responsibility for how presidential electors are chosen, the will of the legislature being expressed through state law. Texas claims the violations of election law in these states created an environment where ballot fraud was enabled and likely to occur. The lawsuit lists the violations of law in each of the defendant states and provides evidence of fraud, the number of ballots handled unconstitutionally in each of the states sufficient to change the outcome of the ballot counts. Now, that's important. If the case would not result in a change of the outcome, the court would not take it. Here's what they have to say about Pennsylvania, for example, and it's broken into three categories: facts, violations of election law, and evidence of fraud. Facts: vote tally, 3,445,548 for Biden, 3,363,951 for Trump, a margin of 81,597. Requests for mail-in ballots, 70% Democrats, 25% Republicans. Mail-in ballots increased from 266,208 in 2016 to over 3 million in 2020. Violations of election law. The Secretary of State unilaterally abrogated signature verification requirements for mail-in ballots. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court changed existing deadline for receiving mail-in ballots from 8 p.m. on the day of the election to 3 days after the election, and adopted a presumption that non-postmarked ballots be considered as valid. Election officials in Philadelphia and Allegheny counties did not follow state law permitting poll watchers to be present for the opening, counting, and recording of mail-in ballots. The Secretary of State directed election officials to remove ballots before 7 a.m. on the day of the election in order to cure, that means correct, defective mail-in ballots. This was done only in Democrat-majority counties. Election officials did not segregate ballots received after 8 p.m. on Election Day, breaking the promise made to the U.S. Supreme Court, thus making it impossible to identify or remove those ballots. Let me say the court is not going to look kindly upon that, among other of these offenses committed. Evidence of fraud. Ballots with no mail date, 9,005, there was no evidence they were sent to a voter. Ballots returned on or before the mail date, 58,221. Ballots returned one day after the mail date, 51,200. Perhaps not impossible, but highly unlikely for the average voter to receive a ballot, fill it out, place it in the mail, and have it returned the following day. Finally, on November 2nd, the day before the election, Pennsylvania reports that 2.7 million ballots had been sent out. On November 4th, that number had increased to 3.1 million, an increase of 400,000 mail-in ballots at election time, with literally no reasonable chance of them being used by legitimate voters. thus Pennsylvania, Georgia, facts, vote tally, 2,472,098 for Biden, 2,458,121 for Trump, a margin of 12,670. Mail-in ballots, 65.32% for Biden, 34.68% for Trump. Mail-in ballots increased from 213,033 in 2016 to 1,305,659 in 2020. Mail-in ballots, in other words, increased by more than a million. Violations of election law. The Secretary of State unilaterally abrogated signature verification requirements for mail-in ballots. The Secretary of State authorized opening and processing mail-in ballots up to 3 weeks before Election Day, when the law prohibits that, until after the polls open on Election Day. The Secretary of State materially weakened the security requirements for ballot rejection based on signature verification or other missing information. Evidence of fraud. Mail-in ballot rejection rate for missing or inaccurate information or for non-matching signatures decreased from 6.42% in 2016 to 0.36% in 2020. Rejecting 2020 ballots at the same rate as 2016 would have resulted in a net gain of 25,587 votes for Trump, twice the number needed to overcome Biden's count. With a six-fold increase in the number of mail-in ballots, reason would indicate that the rejection rate would increase, or at least stay the same, with so many first-time mail-in ballots. Michigan, facts. Vote tally, 2,796,702 for Biden, 2,650,695 for Trump, margin 146,007. In 2016, 587,618 voters requested mail-in ballots. In 2020, 3.2 million votes were cast by mail-in ballots. So that's an increase of over 2.5 million. Democrats voted by mail at a rate approximately two times that of Republicans. Violations of election law. The Secretary of State unilaterally abrogated signature verification requirements for mail-in ballots. The Secretary of State sent out unsolicited ballots to all 7.7 million registered voters, contrary to election law, which requires a voter to request a mail-in ballot through a process that includes a signature to be matched with a voter registration. The Secretary of State also allowed absentee ballots to be requested online without signature verification. Local election officials in Wayne County, containing 322,925 more ballots for Biden than for Trump, open and process mail-in ballots without poll watchers present. Local election officials in Wayne County also ignored the strict election law requirements of placing a written statement or stamp on each ballot envelope indicating that the voter signature was in fact checked and verified with a signature on file with the state. Evidence of fraud. 174,384 mail-in ballots in Wayne County had no valid registration number, indicating they likely resulted from election workers running the same ballots through the tabulator multiple times. 71% of Wayne County absent voter counting boards were unbalanced, where the number of people who checked in did not match the number of ballots cast. Wisconsin, facts. Vote tally, 1,630,716 for Biden, 1,610,151 for Trump, margin 20,565. Mail-in ballots increased from 146,932 in 2016 to 1,275,019 in 2020. That's an increase of around 800,000. Violations of election law. Wisconsin Elections Commission, WEC, positioned hundreds of unmanned illegal drop boxes to collect absentee ballots. The use of any drop box, manned or unmanned, is directly prohibited by Wisconsin statute. Any alternate mail-in ballot site shall be staffed by the municipal clerk or the executive director of the Board of Election Commissioners. Ballots cast in contravention of the procedure specified in those provisions may not be included in the certified result of any election. The WEC encouraged voters to unlawfully declare themselves indefinitely confined in order to avoid security measures like signature verification and photo ID requirements. Nearly 216,000 voters said they were indefinitely confined in the 2020 election, nearly four times as many as in 2016. Strict laws requiring mail-in voters to certify by signature, including the signature of an adult witness, were ignored or circumvented by election officials. Evidence of fraud. 100,000 ballots were supposedly missing and directed to be found after election day. Conclusion. Significant violations of election law that were put into place to protect against election fraud is sufficient to invalidate the results of the elections, apart from whatever evidence is able to be gathered in a short time to show actual numbers of fraudulent ballots. Reason would indicate that there is a high number of fraudulent ballots that are impossible to identify, which is why the election laws pertaining to mail-in ballots were established to begin with. There is no remedy to correct the November 3rd election because ballots that did not adhere to election law cannot be identified as separate from those that did. An accurate count of legal ballots that were cast cannot be made. Therefore, as directed in the Constitution, it falls to the legislature of each state to choose electors as has been done in the past. Failing that, each state may determine not to submit any presidential electors. I would now add that Colorado has joined a 23-state coalition opposing the Texas election law, standing with Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, and Wisconsin. The Colorado Attorney General called the Texas lawsuit a Hail Mary attempt to undermine the presidential election and overturn the will of the voters. But it's certainly not the will of the voters that the election be stolen using mail-in ballots. The pattern, in my opinion, is clear. There turns out to be an earlier case about ballots that were cast subsequent to the deadline, where the Supreme Court ruled 9-0 in favor of the plaintiff, that indeed that was a cast iron requirement. I am very confident in predicting the court will once again rule 9-0 in favor of the plaintiff, Texas, against Pennsylvania, Michigan, Georgia, and Wisconsin. It seems to me very clear cut, both as a matter of law and as a matter of politics. I would just add one further comment from a retired professor of law who sent a letter to the Attorney General of Texas, John Remington Graham by name. To introduce myself, I attach a short resume. I have practiced in the field of constitutional law over 50 years, including service as a public defender, law professor, and chief public prosecutor. My publishing credits include a treatise, 40 years in preparation on the original meaning of the United States Constitution as framed in 1787, implemented in 1789, and amended in 1791, 1798, and 1804. I am now retired and living with my French-Canadian wife in the province of Quebec, Dominion of Canada. I am not just another lawyer. I have important information to transmit for your consideration. Your suit invoking the original jurisdiction of the United States Supreme Court and joined by 21 other states is historic and offers the United States an opportunity to avoid revolution or civil war. I thank you for this gallant, statesmanlike, and patriotic effort. I do not doubt the meritorious evidence offered by Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell. But the power dynamics in courthouse politics renders it impractical to ask for judicial findings of massive electoral fraud, however factual and true, in a presidential election. Your effort turns on abstract principles amenable to judicial decision and offers the practical chance for success. I therefore reaffirm my belief that they will not simply eliminate the illegally cast ballots, which have already been intermixed with the other ballots, rendering that a practical impossibility, but will rule on the principles involved here, including that the state of Pennsylvania acted egregiously in violation of the direction of Associate Justice Alito, that they had to segregate the late ballots from the others, which they did not do. Now, I'm so pleased to have with me here today Jack Mullen. I want to invite, for the first of the rest of this first segment, his thoughts and comments on the lawsuit, which I reiterate, in my judgment, is the most important in the history of the Supreme Court, but which I also believe, given the evidence that I've enumerated here, turns out to be cut and dry. Jack, your thoughts.
Well, thank you, Jim, and thank you for having me on. And I don't know how, you know, I can contribute to this thing. It's clearly evident by this information and the other information that we've seen since the election has ended that the states involved there and others are clearly involved with fraud and in violation of the U.S. Constitution, and then therefore basically a lawless territories now, not necessarily a state anymore, which means that their governors themselves have basically lost their constitutional right, even through their state, to rule over their state, to be an official. So these states are now de facto, and I don't know how else to express it. We have finally reached that point that all of us have been talking about for basically decades. You know, sooner or later, this time period would happen, and now it has. And so these states are now in a situation where, they're basically hangouts for criminals and other lawless activity. As far as this lawsuit is concerned, I would be very interested in seeing it make its way through the system and actually have a chance to get heard. We see things like this come out and then they go away. We never hear anything else about them. Somehow they're, stopped at some point along the way from some technicality or other such thing, generally involving the same people that they are attempting to bring to trial, causing that stoppage. So there's no question from this data that it's mathematically impossible that Joe Biden won those states. And I think that for the thinking person, that's clear anyway. We know that Joe Biden couldn't get, a handful of people to show up at any of his rallies. More or less, could he actually make it through himself without a body double in terms of being able to speak? So obviously, this was a fraud from the very beginning. It was a ploy to put somebody with a recognizable name, I suppose. Maybe Biden's got a name that holds some meaning. I know some Democrats that, honestly believe that this guy was somebody who should have been considered for the office. And the only reason they believe that, of course, is they've never even taken 5 minutes to look into his history and background, his corruption, his historical nature as a serial psychopathic liar with no remorse whatsoever, the empathy of a serial killer. So I'm not the least bit surprised here. As I've mentioned to you, and we've talked about this many times, I don't see that this is going to prevent a civil war. As you mentioned there in your closing argument that it may, or maybe it was the last couple lines of this article, prevent civil war or some sort of revolution. But of course, this thing was created to create revolution and a civil war. And so when the Supreme Court takes it up, there'll be a lot of pressure from them to decide whether they're going to go with the state of Texas or not, because on the grounds that, say, the state of Georgia and others have already concluded that changing their mind, even though their election was pure fraud, would then lead to basically unending violence in certain states in particular, where there are large numbers of these leftist Democrat type people that will, take over the cities and create whatever mayhem they plan to create, which is part of the plan here in order to get this civil war started, which is necessary, I think, in order to bring in outside forces, et cetera, to try to basically take down the United States and have an excuse. So I don't know what else to say except that it's clearly fraud. I applaud the case. It's interesting that it got started in Texas. I mean, Texas still is a bastion of armed Americans that had a state that was once itself its own independent republic, and it could still once again be that. And many people have always thought that if there would be any real pushback against this world takedown of the United States, it would start in Texas. And even though the Blues have attempted to invade and take over the state, it seems like we still have some people kicking down there, and not necessarily in Austin. But anyway, that's my thoughts on the matter. I think it's a great idea. I support it 100%. I'd like to follow it. I hope it stays in the mainstream. I doubt it gets much publicity in the mainstream media. The mainstream media is the most hostile to Americans institution that we have. It's something that controls this entire fabricated reality that we live in, that people believe the evidence of the mainstream media over the evidence of their eyes and the evidence of their ears and what they can see and touch. So they have created, in a sense, a world where you don't have to leave your home. You live in your own isolated area, probably because you're under some form of a lockdown, and the world comes to you through a TV, and you believe what you hear with no other evidence of that actually being true except their word. So I think
hold that thought, Jack. We'll be right back after this break with Jack Mullen.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Be evasive.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
And Genesis chapter 6, verse 4, and there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came and unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Mm-hmm. commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a civil majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that.
Oh, what?
Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution, Revolution. Radio! Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host, with my special guest, Jack Mullen. Jack, from that review of the evidence, it's overwhelmingly obvious that this was a conspiracy between the Democrats in those states to steal the election from the residents of those states by doing a number of measures that were in violation of their own election laws, with which they had to have been familiar. This, in my opinion, is a massive indictment of the Democrat Party as corrupt from stem to stern. And, of course, we have it being led by two individuals who were miserable failures, complete flops on the campaign trail. Where in three efforts to run for president, Joe Biden, over 35 years, had not won a single caucus or a single primary until South Carolina, when Google came to its aid, and where Kamala Harris was the very first of the large number of Democrats that drop out. She didn't even make it to Iowa. And as you have already observed, they couldn't draw 10 people to a rally. The idea he should have a larger turnout of votes than Barack Obama is just absurd beyond belief.
Of course, and this is the nature of the world that we live in today. Everything is absurd beyond your wildest belief. And you know, we should have known. Everyone should have known when they opened it up to basically unlimited mail-in ballots, which ties in nicely with this Corona lockdown garbage. That was one of the ways in which they were opening the pipeline to pure fraud. And these are the sort of things that, you know, we see and we can't make it go away. I mean, it's been known for 1,000 years that you don't allow people to vote by mail or other means that you can't control directly with people having a look at who's actually doing the mailing. And you know, it was Stalin that said that he doesn't care, you know, what the outcome of the election is. He just cares whether or not his candidate wins. So
yeah, it doesn't matter who casts the votes. What matters is who counts them. Joseph
that's
Stalin.
Right. Which is the same thing. I mean, basically, it doesn't matter who you vote for. It only matters who wins. And that's what we see in this situation. I don't think anyone that I know, except for a handful of totally out of this world, you know, out of the picture completely, people believe that Biden won the election. But I think that there are a large number of people that don't care about that. And they're more concerned with the fact that he becomes president, no matter what it takes, and thinking that Trump doesn't deserve to be president, you know, that the Republican Party is a variety of things that the news media made up, really, because everything that Trump's been accused of in his 4 years of being in office has not been real. I mean, these are things that are just entirely made up by the news media and then, you know, echoed by the people who find that topic and that idea interesting. So I don't know what else to say. I mean, the election is finished. I don't know when we'll start to see, some serious effort made to come out with real information about who won the election. I mean, are we going to sit here through January 20th and then just watch Joe Biden be inaugurated because the news media declared him the winner? I mean, that seems to be the way it's marching right now. How do you see it play out?
Oh, Jack, the Supreme Court already requested responses from the four states who are being sued this week. They already have them in hand. That's part of what I was relating, the declarations of the states condemning the lawsuit. Let me remind you, as a cacophony of bogus claims in support of a seditious abuse of the judicial process, resting on a surreal alternate reality. But those are just words. When you look at the facts, when you look at all the evidence there, and I reiterate, anyone can find this on my blog at jamesfetzer.org. When you look at the facts, the violations of election law and the evidence of fraud, it's anything but an imaginary case. It's anything but an alternative reality. I think it's the Democrats who are promoting a surreal alternative reality, just as, you know, Hillary Clinton said, resist, never accept. She was even saying that to Joe Biden, but obviously she was the very instantiation of that attitude of defiance. The Democratic Party has never accepted the results of the election of 2016, and now they're complaining that Trump is not accepting the results of the election of 2020, when there was all the evidence was that both the elections were rigged for the Democrats. I mean, their hypocrisy is mind-boggling, Jack. These are despicable people. And there's more and more evidence coming out. I think there are going to be a lot of really major blockbusting developments, such as it turning out that Eric Swalwell, Democrat from California, who's been Nancy Pelosi's fair-haired boy, has been having an affair with a woman who appears to be a spy for communist China. I mean, it just gets deeper and deeper, and where Pelosi, based upon my research, is deeply involved in Pizzagate. She has her own Goat Hill Pizza in San Francisco, which appears to have satanic aspects to it. I believe she's engaged in child trafficking, drinking and dreamachrome and the whole bit. I mean, she is a terrible, terrible person who even, by the evidence we unearthed, attempted to assassinate the president at the State of the Union by having a sticker with poison in her palm where a lip reader actually was watching the conversations going on among the members assembled, talking about what was going to happen after Trump was dead 2 hours hence from an induced heart attack. I mean, these, Jack, are the most despicable people ever to have high office in the United States. And I will certainly include Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, as well as Nancy Pelosi, when I make that assessment.
I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, this is something that's certainly been coming out over the last 4 years since the Trump administration took office, is the amount of pedophilia that's involved with most of the people in power. And then, of course, the concomitant connection to Satanism and child abuse and child sacrifice and so forth. And, you know, it's just something that we've seen in traditional governments for probably centuries. But we now have them in a large coven, a large collection of them. Historically, society filters them out. They never fully get exposed for some reason or another. I suppose the game would be over then. But in this particular case, sort of like a panorology, we have a collection of a population of psychopaths that have been recruited and collected in positions of power in the United States and in Europe. And in other parts of the world, but specifically I'm thinking of the Western nations. And this group of people under the control of something above, I would suspect, have to be rooted out and removed. And the time has come that this has to happen. Now, the problem we have is that that group of people has empowered and given status to a large number of people that otherwise would have none and would only be wannabes suffering from bad cases of envy that couldn't be focused. And now we have a situation where they actually have a leader, and they are being organized and focused, and they don't have anything to lose and have everything to gain. And so, you know, what we see then going forward here is that these people being enabled by their so-called leadership themselves, degenerate and debauched, can critically endanger what was once thought of as, you know, Americans' constitutional government and a stable system that couldn't be brought down. But in fact, we see that it is being brought down, gutted from the inside. It's Cicero's enemies within. And, you know, my question then becomes, you know, what can be done about this, especially since a large group of people can't be lived with? I mean, there are tens, if not hundreds of millions of people in this country. And I know how many there are, but, you know, maybe 100 million, maybe less, maybe, say, 75 million or so that can't live with people of our nature. This has become something of whether or not we have to separate the nation again into segments and isolate a certain group of people from ourselves, because there's no convincing, there's no way to reason with these people. We don't have any access to any kind of kind re-education. Re-education itself is a very terrible thought and a bad word and historically awful. But yet these people need to be re-educated. I mean, in the sense that maybe they become empowered for a short period of time or somehow enabled or given things they wouldn't normally have, that will only be short-lived. And that ephemeral state will then collapse into something that is characteristic of this situation, which we can allude to, you know, the Soviet Union circa 1921 through, say, 1950. And it becomes, a great leap forward. The Great Mao experiment done by the same people. These civilizations fell into absolute, total, brutal chaos. All their infrastructure, all their manufacturing, the value of their currency and their national wealth looted and destroyed. Massive numbers of people murdered, purges. This is the sort of thing that the founding fathers and that group of thinkers that came out of that enlightened period warned about and built intellectual citadels against, built walls of thought that would prevent this from ever happening, only that it could be disseminated to the people through some sort of education system, not knowing that the idea of the public education system would fail so miserably. Although many in the founding fathers' days had reservations, but this system now seems to be, you know, basically intractable from the point of view of the inside. I mean, we're talking about very, very large portions of the population that don't care that it's totally corrupt and the states are lawless. In fact, they participate. They get something out of it. And they'll get something out of it, as I said, for a period of time. So that's where we are in this quandary. Where does it go from here? And then you couple in this Corona hoax and this fabricated takedown of the United States through shutting down all of its industry and businesses and forcing people to comply with irrational and self-damaging. We just have such a bad situation here. Even if we could get a law, or I'm sorry, if we could get the Supreme Court to look at this and make some decision towards the Trump administration, but actually towards the United States, towards America first. There's still a lot of work to be done to get from here back to where we were even 2 years ago. And this stuff has been festering and promoted by the mainstream media, by the mainstream medical system, by the mainstream university system and public school systems for decades. And it was talked about in the 50s and recognized widely in the 50s. And now we have its fruition. It's child, if you will, grown up and ready to go today. So I'm not certain that it's a bowl of cherries. I'm just saying that I like the idea, but I don't see where the next step goes from here without serious consideration for the fact that we may have to do some work to separate people from people in this country.
Well, it is a stunning situation, Jack, and I regard you as an extremely thoughtful guy when it comes to all these issues. Tell me then, how much difference will it make if indeed the court rules in favor of the plaintiffs and against the defendant states of Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, and Wisconsin, sends it back to their legislatures? It's widely expected that under those circumstances, three or even four of those states will send Republican or Trump electors to the Electoral College, and that the president will thereby be reelected to another term. Now, what I find promising about this is that it will have all been done in accordance with the Constitution. The evidence adduced that I was outlining here that you can find in the article about the Texas lawsuit on my blog at jamesfetzer.org is so blatant, is so compelling, that no rational soul is going to dispute if the court were to rule, particularly if it's unanimous, as I expect it will be 9-0. And then it's not the court deciding who will be president. It's the court deciding whether those states have violated their own statutes and federal law in relation to how they conducted this election, where the evidence is simply overwhelming. And then it will be the state legislatures, which under the Constitution are entrusted with that responsibility in the first place, deciding what electors should be sent to the Electoral College. Now, it seems to me, Jack, under those circumstances, reasonable, serious, mature Americans would accept the outcome. But that's not to take into account the hysteria that the mainstream is going to generate among Democrats. They're going to demonize Trump, claim he's a dictator, that this is the theft of the election, even though it's in accordance with the Constitution. And I've even heard the claim the Democrats are going to call for intervention by the United Nations. Give me your thoughts about this scenario and how it might play out.
Well, I think you just created, most of the picture there. The problem, of course, is that it's in accordance with the Constitution, a Constitution that is continuously belittled and degraded by the mainstream media and academia. You have people like Steve Pachenik, for example, saying he's not an aficionado of the Constitution, and he's supposedly on the side of the right. He thinks that it's an outdated document. Well, of course, that's has always been the cry of those who want lawlessness over a document that provides fundamentally sound law and principles of law that make it possible for civilization to grow and sustain itself, basically by promoting those that are productive over those that are unproductive, whereas the alternative is always that the unproductive steal from the productive and then begin when everything that is stolen, they turn on the productive as though it were something that they caused. And so in this case, you're right. The mainstream media will probably not mention this case. If it mentions it, it will be relegated to the back pages. And then when the time comes for it to be resolved, and in the case that they go with Texas, then the mainstream media will say that Trump is trying to steal the election and will promote it that way. And I believe then they will start the system into a riot mode, whereas some of the states, for example, and I'm thinking of Georgia in particular, but not necessarily Pennsylvania, will have difficulty presenting it to their own people. And their, the idea of them actually being involved with the electoral process afterwards seems to me to be a stretch of the imagination. So there's a long way to go between you know, actually having the case heard and then the outcome going towards the state of Texas and it actually having any effect on the election itself. Now, my guess is that from that point of view, the Trump administration then will have to make a decision as to whether they will maintain their position as holding office. And then from that, how does the military get involved if it can't be settled in the states? If the states don't participate, what's next? I mean, then we don't actually have a constitutionally elected anybody, and it becomes a free-for-all. And then to me, it looks like it'll degenerate into some sort of battle for the White House. And I think that's one of the scenarios that was predicted in that PIP document, which I know you can remember its name, but I can't think of it at the moment, that was out with John Podesta and his gang. What was it back in 2017 when they predicted these various outcomes of the election?
When they were wargaming,
Right. So, you know, this is one of the outcomes that they predicted, and in such would be like a stalemate. What would happen then? And so, you know, then we have the argument of if Trump's going to maintain control of the situation, how is he going to deal with it from the position of just being in charge of the federal government when the states themselves can claim sovereignty and, you know, a variety of other things? Now, I would conclude that the states are no longer lawfully, constitutionally a state. They have broken that. You know, it'd be the same thing as when they got rid of their own Republican governments. The Constitution guarantees a Republican government in the states. We certainly don't have that. And so these states are technically not states anymore, and their governors are not constitutionally empowered to, you know, function as a governor. So I think it's just beyond. I mean, all we can do is speculate. I still believe that it's going to, because that's what it's designed to do. Bring in some form of a revolutionary behavior, the same thing that has been done in the past in these various nations I always mention. This is the next revolution in their own progression of revolutions, the one they've been talking about, you know, for hundreds of years. And it is designed specifically to take down Western civilization, to disempower and disenfranchise the Europeans that created Western civilization, and then to move most of the control of this world into the Middle East and the Orient, and you know, a new world evolved from that. And as you mentioned the other night during our during the False Flags and Conspiracies 2020 conference, that the Deagle.com projection of genocides basically, you know, predict that. Now, you know, I see that Time Magazine is out with Biden and that woman being, you know, Men and Women of the Year, I guess, or the Persons of the Year. And of course, it was Time Magazine who wrote an article in, there was an article in Time that was, don't have it right here in front of me, but it was in, I think, October of 2020, where they conclusively stated that Biden will win the election. And then from there, they explained how this system would be, you know, brought back into line with being normal again over a period of time. I wish I could dig that article out, because that's just one of those articles that, you know, just so illuminating, if you don't mind the use of that word, that these people were able to accurately predict at that point in time what's going to happen. I mean, this thing is just something that seems to be out of our control at this point. Now, the real control comes when the people themselves decide to wake up, and if they decide, and whether they take this vaccine or not. And so, you know, and whether they agree with being hungry and starved into the cities. I mean, these things are nothing right now. We still are pre-vaccine, pre-starvation. There is a period of time. But let's imagine that they shut down the power as Klaus, what's his name, you know, suggested with the World Economic Forum. And that, you know, they do claim there's a cyber attack on our power systems, et cetera. Then what happens? And how does this thing fall apart then? Now, one of the problems they have with that is the mainstream media goes down with it. And so that makes it a little bit dicey, because the mainstream media is the mind control machine that's focused on the brains of the most susceptible. And apparently there is a way to reach their brains, very similar to the idea of a targeted individual. And they are being controlled by this signal. And it's kind of like the movie, you know, They Live. If we could shut down that system, like in V for Vendetta, when he took control of the mainstream media and explained to the people that it was their fault, maybe we could wake up and maybe we could take this back. And maybe everyone would come to their senses. But right now they've empowered some of the worst types of people in the world. And that is not just on the left side. It's on the left and the right. And the type of criminal personalities, degenerates, pedophiles, people that have compromised backgrounds, they populate all kinds of positions of power, even in the counties. And in that situation, you know, you have a lot of inertia against change. After all, if this does change and they become exposed, you know, their entire life is going to change dramatically. And I think as a force together, they're organized that way. Even if they don't directly communicate, they know, you know, a group of criminals is going to work to support the main group, even if they don't know the members, if they know they're all going to the gallows.
So, Jack, you're making wonderful points. I want to let everyone know they can call in today with questions for Jack or me. The number 540-352-4452. Mitchell will handle your call. We're eager to hear from you to share your thoughts about these matters of ultimate importance to the future of our nation. Have no doubt about it. This one is for all the marbles, and the plans for the Great Reset coming from the World Economic Forum, to which we are hearing from Jack, have no doubt about it. They will change our life forever if they're allowed to get a grip on the United States. And there are powerful forces seeking to do just that. I repeat the number, 540-352-4452. Mitchell will field your call. Come and join Jack Mullen and me on The Raw Deal. We want to hear from you.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Let
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the Internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. Jack and I are going to continue discussing these issues of monumental importance. If anyone would like to call and join the conversation, 540-352-4452. I repeat, 540-352-4452. Jack, you mentioned Time Magazine. I mean, in my opinion, this makes Time complicit, along with the Washington Post, the New York Times, CNN, MSNBC, in this huge, vast, sprawling conspiracy to steal the election for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. I find it ironic in multiple grounds, including that the Time cover, the person of the year, is supposed to be the individual who, for good or for bad, had the greatest effect upon the course of events during the year. That's manifestly not Joe Biden and Kamala Harris combined. That's Donald Trump. But once again, they're doing everything they can to suppress any recognition whatsoever for Trump, who is a great mover and shaker, who has promised a whole lot of developments are going to be taking place right now in the immediate future, where we've had bombs dropped about Hunter Biden and his laptop, which CNN is only now allowing to be a real issue after having suppressed it for virtually an entire year, and the fact that Eric Swalwell has been having this relationship with a Chinese spy, where Nancy Pelosi astonishingly has come to his defense, and where we know that Dianne Feinstein, and there's these people are all from California, had a chauffeur for decades who was another Chinese spy. I mean, it's absolutely disgraceful. Meanwhile, we've been joined by a regular caller from California. Paul, join the conversation.
Imagine a boot, a black leather boot with Kamala Harris's foot in it, stamping on your face for the next 8 years.
Sounds Orwellian.
I myself have ordered my Democratic Party pin already, and I'm getting ready to go ahead and choose between the vaccines. I guess you two both know that three major companies, Pfizer, AstraZeneca, and Moderna, are all producing a vaccine. Jack, I was wondering which one you favored, or would you like to try them all, see which one is 95% effective?
Paul, I'm glad you brought that up. It's something I wanted to segue into, but here's my idea on this in a nutshell. All three of these vaccines have some different technology. So now these are not vaccines, so let's call them VaxTech. But this VaxTech is based on different forms of supposedly getting to the same end. However, they use different technologies. And some of them are using these little pins with electroporalysis and others, some sort of gel or whatever. But what I'm thinking is that this is the way in which these ghouls who plan on running the world and you and I become their stock slave people, that's how they plan to separate you out, because I think you become the property of whatever vaccine company you choose. Because as you know, if you take the first vaccine from Pfizer, you can't take Moderna's vaccine as the second one. And naturally, you're going to need two, because you're hard to get immunity into. So after that, we become the property of that particular provider. In the future, when our programming wears off or we get a new virus and we have to have an update, we're going to have to go to Pfizer if that's who we took the original vaccine from. To me, that sounds very reasonable. This is a Borg society now owned in a corporate structure that has no relationship to the world we're used to living in. And you become corporate property, and that's the nature of this medical technocracy that is emerging. They've split us up.
I believe you're probably right. I believe that the taller white males will be singled out for extra booster shots.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. You have a Germanic surname, and you have blue eyes. Okay, put another booster into that booster, would you?
Right.
Yeah.
I agree. So I'm not going to plan on taking any of them, by the way. I suppose if that...
Really? You needed to say that, huh? Okay.
I just want you to know, you know, if that's the last stand, then it's the last stand. I mean, we have some last stand. I figure it's better to go while I'm still strong enough to fight back than to, you know, be turned into some sort of creature that can't even, that thinks 2 + 2 = 5. So to use one of your references.
What I find striking still, and it's ongoing out here, is the level of compliance. Even though there's probably a lot of people that don't really want to wear a mask, they're still doing it. And I mean, I just had a conversation the other evening that, you know, I initiated just because of the way it came about. And it was with some black woman. And, you know, she quickly, as soon as I said a few things, she goes, you know, I agree with you. I believe you, right? And that was my invitation just to go on a kind of a rant, which was appropriate because I just had a little cup of coffee. And it didn't take long, and I was talking about basically everything that we've talked about on the show for years, including the Jews. And what was fascinating is at the first opportunity, you know, she says, you know, my roommate, you know, I live in a house, and one of my roommates is from Russia, and she's always talking about the same kind of stuff too.
Imagine that.
Oh, you know, yeah. So, you know, people were aware, and you know, she was periodically adjusting her mask as we were talking, even though the conversation originated by the fact that I didn't have a mask on, and I told her why, and I never wear one, and that we need the oxygen, and there is no law. And Gavin Newsom has been, you know, has been permanently enjoined by a court here in California. That's the thing that people don't get. Nobody knows anything, as I'm sure you well know. And the court decision out here was what you call a tentative court decision. And then it was basically made permanent 10 days later when the state didn't respond. And in the language of the decision was permanently enjoined from issuing further orders. And yet here he is still issuing orders. So it just shows that these people are being run from above, shall we say, and it's part of an agenda. And they are fully committed to pursuing this agenda no matter what, no matter laws, court decisions, constitution, none of that matters.
Yep, they're operating with impunity because they are protected. And, you know, regardless of what the courts say, that's just ceremonial, and they'll ignore it completely. I mean, they had a similar thing happen in Pennsylvania with what was a Ninth Circuit or whatever, and joined them from some aspect of restricting business from operating, and they said okay, and then they just kept right on going. There was nothing significant that was changed. So I agree with you.
Yep. So I actually have that decision on my desktop. I have the Pennsylvania decision, that is a district court there, the Colorado decision, the district court in Colorado, and then the decision out here in California. Have all three of those on PDF. And then, of course, there's been other decisions in Illinois, I believe, and then also, if I'm not mistaken, Ohio, and just the what you call the local or the superior courts, that found consistently that the governors don't have the constitutional authority. They're operating outside the bounds of their office by issuing these orders. And every single one of them has been in our favor. But you really haven't seen that covered much on CNN, have you?
Not at all, as a matter of fact. And the local people don't know anything about it. And, you know, I live in West Virginia, and West Virginia is already planning their distribution of the vaccine, and they've enabled and empowered the National Guard to guard it to its various drop points and stuff, as though someone's going to steal these vaccines and what, sell them on the open market. I mean, this is absolutely absurd nonsense. What they're concerned about probably is a group of people get their hands on it and throw it all in the sea. But the state media, the main media of the state, which is just one single outlet, just never stops with the corona cases are on the rise. The case demic is, you know, blowing up, and the hospitals are full. I mean, these things are just straight up total lies. I've driven into the local hospital and where I live, and there's no cars in the parking lot. There's nobody there. There's nothing happening.
Exactly.
And of course, now that they've been able to use the flu as the reason that people are dying and calling it COVID, and then right in front of the Americans' eyes, they just stopped reporting flu information. For a while, they just said it dropped off. You know, it went from several hundred thousand deaths a year, whatever, down to zero. Well, of course, it had all those deaths every year back into infinity. So, you know, all of a sudden they went to zero. They thought maybe that sounded a little ridiculous. So now they just said, well, we're not going to report it. And these are the sort of things you can't get before the American people. And as hard as I try to do it with signs all over my car and dropping off pamphlets in every post office and church I can find, I don't see it happening. I do see people dying in these clinical trials. Apparently, there's been six people dead in the Pfizer trial. And I got a copy that somebody sent me of the trial results here. And it looks like, out of the first 19,000 or whatever people that they jabbed with this garbage, they had 21% have some sort of, what do they call it? It's a adverse effect. And of those, six of them were deaths. That's pretty adverse. anyway, are people going to just line up to take a vaccine from a company that has no legal responsibility? From a vaccine that's supposedly just generated since the middle of this summer, or this past summer, it's like this can't be real.
It's laughable.
It is laughable.
And you mentioned a movie earlier, They Live, and I've years and years ago I recommended to Jim, and I'm sure he still hasn't seen it with his busy schedule, but I recommended to him the movie Idiocracy. Have you seen that?
Right. Yes, sir. Yeah. Oh, I absolutely live in that idiocracy. And you and I are...
It's actually occurring.
I mean, we're a couple of the people that weren't idiots. I can't remember the primary character that went in there. It wasn't an idiot. They elected president or whatever. But
it was go ahead.
No. I want you to finish it because you remember it more than I do.
Oh, yeah, it's great. It's a great movie. I mean, for me, and of course, if people watch that, they'll probably look at me and go, what the hell are you talking about, Paul? But for me, I would put it in one of the top five movies I've seen just overall for what it says and the content. But yeah, a man of average intelligence, and he is clearly average, goes into the future. And because of basically de-evolution or dysgenics, when he arrives in the future, he is the smartest man anywhere. And through a series of bunglings and trials and tribulations, he becomes president, and it's quite hysterical. So Yeah, Jim, I highly recommend watching the movie Idiocracy. You'll get what Jack and I are talking about.
No, I'm glad, Paul, and you're having a great conversation. What do you think is going to happen if, as I anticipate, the Supreme Court rules 9-0 that the state legislatures of Wisconsin, Michigan, Georgia, and Pennsylvania have the right to determine how their electors cast their votes because they invalidate what actually took place? What is going to be the reaction? How is the mainstream going to cover it? How are the Democrats going to react? How will the people respond?
I'm not sure about that. I think probably the most significant thing that will come out of that is I'll have to address an envelope with your name in it, put a $20 bill and put a stamp on it and send it away.
Yeah, Jack didn't know that we had this bet on the side, but I'm interested what you think will be the course of events thereafter. And Jack, too, of course. But Paul?
Just all facetiousness aside, I really don't know. I think that it fits in with the plans either way. I think that, they're looking for some sort of unrest. And they'll probably get the most unrest when Trump gets in, because these people are the most, I guess they're going to pitch a temper tantrum. The Trump supporters are less likely to pitch a temper tantrum, in my opinion, but there'll still probably be some very upset people, and a lot of them will be ready to go. But I think more than likely it'll be just some spurts and some fits here and there, and then things will, within maybe a few months at the most, things will just start to grind on into the future as usual. And if Trump's in there, I think everybody and myself is going to be watching, okay, what's going to become of all these traitors that committed treason, insurrection, incitement to riot. If people like Jack and I were calling the shots, they would all be arrested and tried, including all the people in the media, because they are the ones that have been promoting this. So if that doesn't occur and these people are all left in power, then what does it matter who's president, right? If the people that are in power remain in power behind the scenes, and it's just going to be four more years of dredging up scandals against Trump and Trump not really taking decisive action, then, what's the point? As I mentioned on this call, not this call, but a previous call, Trump, if he's real, if he's serious, if whatever part of him is authentic, he has to have the will to power. Jack knows what that means, and so do I. If he doesn't have the will to power, then what's the point of being president?
Yeah, I agree with all that. And obviously, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are pathetic mediocrities who have no business being anywhere near the White House, much less occupying. It's outrageous. There's been a hint that, the most extreme form might be to declare Trump is a tyrant and to ask for UN troops to enter the United States. What do you believe would ensue, Paul? In my opinion, it would be a bloodbath.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Part of me, like I said, is just let's just get it over with. I mean, all this foreboding of the future, they want us to be insecure. They want us to worry, right? They want us to have fear of what's to come. And it's sort of like, you look back in your life and, what of the things that you would change, in my view, one of the things I would have changed would not to put off things that were inevitable, things that had to be done that you didn't want to do, and unpleasant things. So it's kind of like, all right, if this is what's going to happen, let's go. Let's get it going. I'm tired of the suspense.
Jack, your thoughts?
Well, I covered that pretty extensively in the first half about what I think would happen. I think that Paul's right. There's been a debate among my friends about, will it be Trump that's put into office that creates the backlash from the left, or will it be the left continuing to go forward and pretending that they actually won the election that might, shake the tree of the sleeping whites who most earnestly showed up in Virginia to support a Second Amendment issue, but, are now wearing masks and hiding out at home during this deliberate hoax. So, which one of those would create the most problem? The right is armed, and the middle class white American is quite capable of defending himself, even if he's a bit stodgy around the belly at this point. And they would then be able to create the most havoc. I don't know. I don't know which one of those. I think they're both game. I think Trump's already had 4 years to get done what he could have gotten done to straighten this out and anticipate this sort of vote fraud. And then we hear this nonsense about they put watermarks on the ballots and there's going to be arrests. And QAnon says, you know, be looking for the arrests. There's no arrests. That particular plan, the QAnon plan, is reminiscent of a plan that's described in the Soviet history, especially written by, say, people like Anatoly Galitsyn in New Lies for Old. In 1921 or so, the Soviets concocted one of their deceptions, which is the entire idea of communism, to produce a program called Operation Trust. And I think it's an interesting thing because we're trusting the plan now. Well, they were trusting the plan then. And, Operation Trust's idea was that they would manufacture the idea that internally the Soviet Party was under internal stress, that there were many loyal to the czar still in charge of high positions, that the people themselves were sick of it, the communism was probably going to be through soon. And they then empowered these generals and others to be part of Operation Trust and go out into Europe and tell people, listen, don't try to oppose us right now. We need money and we need help. We need information, et cetera, but we don't need any outward display of negativity towards the Soviet Union so that we can let the people internally take over and destroy this thing. And then they'll rise out of that and there won't be an opportunity for the Soviets to fight back. And of course, that turned out not to be true at all. What they did is they just sucked in all the Soviet sympathizers that were both inside the nation who tried to join the trust operation or Operation Trust. And then they got people from the outside who were collected into this as well, including a famous spy, which his name has escaped now, but they brought him back to the Soviet Union, claiming that he was going to be introduced to the trust operation individuals and given, you know, accolades, et cetera. Well, they got him into the Soviet Union and immediately tried him and killed him. And that's how I feel this stuff's working out right now. I think that, you know, Americans got to rely on themselves. They've got to wake up. They've got to take back their own governments. That starts from the very place of the county. I think the county sheriff's important, but if he's not going to be somebody that goes along with it, then maybe the militias of the state, et cetera. But there has to be some way that we can go around this facade. These governments are fake. They don't even, they're not, they're illegitimate now. They've lost the right under the Constitution to have power. So they remain in power simply by force. And because people are unable to understand that they are illegitimate at this point. And so that's what I'm looking forward to.
And it's interesting that you say that what you just said about, because I kind of keyed on it, first of all, illegitimate, and then they remain in power by force. But, you know, here's the thing, Jack, very little force is necessary. It's all basically mind control, mind and emotional control of this virus thing, because they are continuing to attempt, you know, to get everybody to believe that they have any power at all to issue orders, which they don't. I mean, this is right. The thing that's staggering to me. You know, these lockdown orders, these mask wearing orders, these social distancing. It's unbelievable how people just go along with this, and it's going on what now? In 8 months, 9 months? And it was something, like I said, I warned people about immediately as soon as I saw this nonsense. And, you know, I knew the writing was on the wall. So, I mean, I got terminated from my job back in April for a particular reason, but I'm sure they were already looking for other reasons, because I remember the operations manager of the warehouse. He was just some kid in his 30s. And, you know, one day I would see him taking this, sanitizer and wiping down the doors and the door handles and doing all this stuff. And, you know, I just made some comments to him about, you know, hey, it's antibacterial. It's not, you know, viral. And I said, there's no viruses on the handles. There's no viruses on this, that. And, you know, it was well known, my sentiments at the time. He kind of rolled his eyes a little bit and he goes, come on, Paul, can't you just get with the program? And it's like, you know, not if the program is stupidity. It's hard for me to get with it. So
let me just toss in a couple of thoughts here. You guys are having a wonderful conversation. I believe Trump knew that the efforts to steal the election would culminate here in 2020, and he actually planned for it very thoroughly, but it has to play out for him to be able to entrap the deep state participants, just to use that phrase, because it's so convenient and we know what we're talking to. So I don't see that as a problem. In addition, you have heard me report on the raid in Frankfurt to secure the servers where Gina Haspel, the CIA director, was present at the raid, either injured or killed. My take is she was injured, that five members of the special ops force were in fact killed because Gina's bodyguards put up a fight. But then on a flight to Gitmo, where she was being interrogated, she decided it would be in her best interest to turn state's evidence, and now they've issued a fake obituary notice. It happened much too quickly and coincidentally to cover that she's actually in witness protection. Now, here's a very interesting report from a Daniel Natal, who is a national security expert, asking if the raid were an indication bigger things than the 2020 election are going on behind the scene. Now that National Security Action Memorandum 57 has transferred powers from the CIA to the Department of Defense, he explains that National Security Action Memorandum 57 was created by President Kennedy to cut the CIA out of power and to transfer their special ops capabilities to the Department of Defense, which is directly under presidential control. However, NASAM 57 was never implemented because of his assassination. Even though it was on the books, presidents for decades were afraid to invoke it. But after nearly 60 years, Trump has now triggered it. And according to Daniel Natal, the fallout has been monumental. He says we're hearing accounts, too, of Chinese interference in the election. But here's the thing. The CIA may have been using China as a platform, as a base of operation. Though many aren't aware of it, the CIA actually has its roots in China. There's more to this that's going to develop, but I think it's extraordinarily important that Donald Trump would invoke this National Security Action Memorandum that Jack introduced, but no president heretofore has pursued. We're going to our break. I'm glad you're here, Paul. We'll be right back. Give us a call if you have questions for us.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Did you ever feel that things were not quite right? That everything was just ever so slightly askew?
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain.
Then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me death!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point on Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
This is Jim Fetzer, where I'm very pleased to have my guest today, Jack Mullen, and we have Paul on the phone. I want to complete a bit more about this piece by Daniel Natal on the battle between the CIA and the Department of Defense. You can find it at Forbidden Knowledge TV. He mentioned about the CIA having its roots in China and expands as follows. This goes back to the Opium Wars, which first opened the port of Shanghai and handed over Hong Kong's sovereignty to Britain. The British drug trade in China funded the Bank of England, and some Americans got involved, including the grandfather of President Franklin Roosevelt and the great-grandfather of Democrat John Kerry. Natal deadpans, all these people who are presented to us as respectable are the equivalent of Colombian drug kingpin Pablo Escobar. Everybody knows that the British banking system as we know it today was built on the proceeds of the drug war in China. And HSBC Bank is no exception, where their initials stand for Hong Kong Shanghai Bank. The Bidens were doing business with them, I add. By the way, he continues, they were busted for laundering money for drug cartels not too long ago. And HSBC also appears to be the owner of the Dominion voting software that is at the heart of the current disputed election. FBI hatchet man James Comey, after letting HSBC walk on its money laundering charges, was later appointed to sit on its board of directors. I mean, this is really a pretty fascinating report. And if this is accurate, and I suspect that it is, that Donald Trump has invoked this National Security Action Memorandum to take away the operational capability from the CIA, that's a gigantic step in the right direction. Jack, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I just glanced at this article, so I don't know. I mean, I haven't delved into it other than I just saw a couple of lines here. The CIA is a secret police of British banks. And it's not American. It was never American. It was installed in the United States to ensure that the policies of the global central bankers were carried out. I mean, that completely, I agree with that completely in the sense that, you know, the CIA is probably the left arm of the Mossad, and that these British banks are under control of the Jewish banking empire. But that doesn't square with the idea that Donald Trump would be interested in separating the CIA from its, you know, position of being in charge or being controlled by the British banks and, you know, and no longer having any power as such in the United States. That doesn't, to me, square because, yeah, as you know, I feel pretty strongly that Donald Trump is an agent of the Zionist world empire, which includes the global banking system and the sort of people that funded his campaign. So, I find this story interesting, especially with the amount of China bashing in it. You know, this China bashing stuff started with Alex Jones right after Trump started his campaign. And then as Alex became the Trump Channel, he then switched all the enemies from historical enemies to China, even claiming that China controls Wall Street and the central banks and the Federal Reserve, even said. I mean, there's so many ridiculous things that were said by him, calling them Chi-Coms. China makes a convenient enemy. China, though, however, is strongly in bed with Israel and the Belt and Road construction and this new global economy that they're planning, and they've dealt the United States out. I feel strongly the United States is being relegated to the position of just a large growing plantation, such as we see in the movie Hunger Games. Yeah. And so, you know, this feels like it just feels like another deception. I mean, it sounds really good and all on the Chi-Coms, blah. I've never been too concerned about the Chi-Coms. I mean, they tend to focus on their own internal politics, and historically, you know, they've been easily misled, especially by the Jewish opium wars. And so, you know, they're convenient in any scapegoat situation. Look how they were used during this the Wuhan coronavirus situation. So from my point of view, I don't see that as anything other than just more, you know, window dressing in a situation where we're trying to make Trump look like he's doing something good.
Well, of course, I think you underestimate Donald Trump. I do believe he's dedicated to American interests first. The Belt and Road, you know, the Silk Road, New Silk Road and so forth, goes through Iran. There's a very powerful collusion between China and Iran to bring Chinese products through Iran and then upward into Europe and that part of the world. So I think you're wrong about that. I also believe that Trump has to play a very cagey game, which he's very skillful at doing, in order to, you know, not tip his hand too much in advance. But I think this is an utterly striking development and very positive indeed for, in essence, dismembering the CIA, taking away its operational capacity. I think that's something that was long desirable. And I'm really quite ecstatic to see him taking that move. Paul, your thoughts?
Well, in regards to China, you know, the only thing that I really need to know about it is that I see all kinds of Jews and their Shabbos Goy cooperators, you know, decrying the Chinese and the Chinese Communist Party. I mean, just was a recent nauseating appearance by Mark Levin on Sean Hannity's show. And even though, of course, you know, Mark Levin's conservative talk is the thing that makes him such a popular or successful talk show host, you know, the bottom line is in this short interview, and I could send you guys the clip, what does he bring up? He brings up the Holocaust a couple of times. Right. And then he starts talking about the vaccine, and that only Trump could have got this vaccine fast tracked. And only Trump had the leadership to provide the resources to these vaccine companies to develop this vaccine. And only Trump is going to be you know, the one that's going to be responsible for saving millions of lives. You can hear this Jew, Mark Levin, say this. And Sean Hannity is basically just like, you know, clapping like a seal the whole time. Just I'll finish with China real quickly. No matter how determined Chinese were to get American and European manufacturing operations located in their country, they couldn't have done it without Jewish-controlled Wall Street and Jewish-controlled finance. That's the way it goes. So in my opinion, there's only one enemy we really need to be focused on and talking about before we turn to China to deal with them in whatever way we might need to. But the bottom line is, in my opinion, America first means live and let live with everybody else. Let's do our own thing here. Let's take care of our own people. If something can be manufactured here, we should manufacture it here to provide jobs for working Americans, not to undermine them by taking the cap off of the H-1B visa, which was done not too long ago under Trump. So that's for now.
Well, I have no more privileged access to truth than anyone else, but my take would be that Trump is a good guy, and the reason they have made so many efforts to get rid of him is precisely because he's not one of them. If he were, they'd be touting him, praising him, instead of trying to sabotage him with Russiagate, Ukrainegate, the impeachment, the coronavirus. There are such global aspects to this anti-Trump phenomenon that it tells me speaks volumes that the establishment in the past on both sides, but now predominantly on the Democrat globalist side, fear Trump. And they have done everything they can to get rid of him. This right. Completely fraudulent election being only the latest and most obvious of all these cases. But there's a history here that they right. do not like Trump. And I recall Hillary telling, you know, that longtime advisor of the Democratic Committee after she was on a town hall where she didn't have all the questions, if he gets in, we'll all hang. That's what Hillary said. There's no question about it. Bill Still reported about it. I followed it up. Had it exactly right. If Trump gets in, we'll all hang. I believe that's still in the offing. Jack.
Paul. Okay, I was just going to quickly react to that. And Jim, just so there's no misunderstanding me, you know, what's the best way I can phrase this? I don't really disagree with a lot of what you say, and I agree with your sentiment, and I'm one of your many fans. I appreciate your passion and the side that you're on, and I think that it's part what you talk about is part of the tapestry, okay? I think that Trump, you know, is not just a black and white. People like myself or Jack, you know, we like to point out the gigantic chinks in his armor, and there's more than a few. But I hope that you're right. Okay, I want your view to be the correct one. I just have my doubts, and I just think that people need to be prepared for the fact that he might not be fully on our side. How much he's on our side, I think, remains to be seen. But in my opinion, okay, I think that this is a very large stage play we're witnessing, and that there might be more than one faction involved here. And it's clear that there's a very large faction that does not like Trump and is opposed to him. And that, in my opinion, makes him attractive to a lot of average Americans.
Paul, I want to compliment you on your whole conversation with Jack today in this continuation. It's been one of your very best appearances on this show. And, of course, you have many. I just want to tell you how much I appreciate everything you've been saying here today. When Trump, of course, moved the embassy to Jerusalem, declared the Golan Heights to be part of Israel, unfunded the UN agency assisting the Palestinian refugees, even rewrote by executive order the definition of anti-Semitism to include criticism of the government or actions of Israel, I found that outrageous. I excoriated him here in no uncertain terms. On the other hand, it may be he is keeping his friends close, but his enemies closer. Israel, I believe, is our greatest problem. I agree 100% with that. The Israelis run our networks. They are the mainstream media. How many times have I mentioned my panel of 100 executives from CNN, all of whom were dual U.S. Israeli citizens, 100 executives from NBC, all of whom were dual U.S. Israeli citizens, 100 executives from the New York Times, all of whom were dual U.S. Israeli citizens. I do believe Zionism in Israel and the zealots, including Bibi Netanyahu, are public enemy number one and pose the greatest threat to the United States. Jack, your thoughts.
Well, Jim, I mean, I got to go with Paul in the sense that I appreciate your loyalty, too. I mean, it's historic that, you know, members of your generation and sloshing into mine have always been or attempted to be loyal to their president, and as they should be, assuming that, you know, he's somebody that gets that loyalty. And then most of us would agree you get the loyalty until you deserve it not. I'd spent a good bit of time looking into the whole concept of Judaism and what it is about, and how it's been rolling out a weaponized political system for much longer than most people have any idea, and how it's been functioning in earnest to take over the West since at least the 17th century. And how it created these banks, which were then able to funnel the wealth of Western civilization into their coffers. And then in 1913, they did the same in the United States, at which point the United States changed forever. Its internal culture was manipulated. The advent of the media was monopolized by these people. They became part of the Rockefeller Foundation medical system, which then dominated protocols of medicine, especially allopathic medicine, eliminating homeopathic medicine, introducing these chemicals they call medicines. We have a model that represents, you know, death and misery going forward through treatment of symptoms, et cetera. These things all happened after the same people, the Jewish banking constabulary establishment, took over the United States in earnest completely. I mean, that's not to say they weren't involved with the Civil War, that they weren't involved in the various banking collapses of the late 1800s. But after 1913, they were able to strangle the wealth system in the United States and funnel that wealth directly into the pocket. Taking that wealth to the world, they brought misery. They maintained control over the U.S. military for decades and decades, one false flag war after another. The United States never out of war for any longer than a 5 to 10 year period since 1913. You know, the millions that have been killed, the 60, 70, 100 million people in World War II, the United States had no business in World War I. I mean, immediately after the Federal Reserve Act and attaching interest to income taxes, you know, the United States was deliberately put into war by this same group of people to satisfy their ends, and the Balfour Agreement, et cetera, to produce a way in which Israel could have or the Jews could have control of that area that they call Israel now. So, I mean, there's not like we're coming out of the middle of nowhere. We see Donald Trump, his own son-in-law, is Chabad Lubavitch, one of the most virulently anti-white, anti-American, anti-Goy organizations on the planet, who espouse the Noahide laws and want to enslave all Americans to the Noahide laws that will not conform. Or can't conform to Judaism. And those who refuse to accept Noahide laws, it says on the Chabad Lubavitch website that they will lose their heads and then they will be decapitated. So, I mean, these things are right in front of our faces. Then we see Trump being funded by people like Sheldon Adelson, who said that all he ever wanted to be was a good Israeli. So these are people that are not American. They're not American first. The government is populated with dual citizen Israelis. The 9/11 was completely done by dual citizen Israelis and people like Chertoff working on the inside to undermine, maintain control of the media, muzzle the media, prevent any investigation. So this list goes on and on and on. Now we have people like Steve Pachenik, who's on Alex Jones, telling us to just relax one more time. But in 2016, he was saying, you know, Trump was a coup and soon we're going to arrest Hillary. Well, none of that stuff happened, not any of it. And it was less than a month ago that Pachenik was on Jones saying, you know, we've tainted the voting ballots with encrypted some sort of watermark, and we'll be able to determine who the criminals are, and the arrests are going to start next week. Well, there's no arrests, not going to be any arrests. And Bochenik himself claims that he's related to Ramban or Maimonides, the most highly thought of Israeli rabbi from the 12th century, who actually has a likeness of him in the U.S. Congress. Why would the U.S. Congress have a likeness of Maimonides hanging in a place that's supposed to be American first? Well, you wouldn't have that there. And so I'm saying that, this thing is far greater than just the idea. How would it even be possible for Trump to become part of this? He couldn't. You didn't see Ron Paul get even 3 foot into this political foray. He was immediately removed. His vote's not counted. The television cameras turned off. They didn't turn off Trump's camera. And one last thing I want to say here is that communist Chinese is a communist nation created by the Soviet Union. And then hand-placed Mao Zedong, who was a Western-educated individual, into the position of Gulag dictator. And those same people created Israel. Israel's a satellite state of the former Soviet Union, with all of its founding members from Europe, with no genetic connection at all to historic Israelis. So these people were all basically a outcropping of the former Soviet Union. The Soviet Union has said outwardly that they plan to infiltrate all the nations, and using that model of deception, undermine until these nations could be then controlled in a communist fashion. That's what we have today. I think that Trump's arguments with Hillary and these battles and the media attacks on him are only to do what it's doing. It's creating division, and they need strong division in a nation that's got more than 180 million weapons owned by a very powerful group of people that were once in control of the world. So they're going to have to do this very carefully, and that's how I see it.
Well, you have a very strong mind, Jack, and you have a marvelous ability to marshal arguments, evidence, and make historical allusions. Paul, I think very similarly of you. So to me, it's really joyful to have the two of you together for this length of time. This has been one of the most enjoyable conversations or second hours on the Raw Deal in my memory, and I'm just grateful to you both. So I want to give each of you an opportunity to make a closing statement. Since Jack is my guest, he'll go last. Paul, your final thoughts. We have 5 minutes, so take two.
Thanks. Yeah, that was quite a nice little run there, Jack.
Thank you, Paul.
Appreciate that knowledge. And I did not know that Steve Bochenik said such a thing, and my only take would be, well, if a former CIA agent and Jew says something, you can be pretty sure it's the truth.
Yep.
Jim, I appreciate your compliments. That was very nice of you, and it does mean something to me. I will quickly, since I have 2 minutes, I will get this done here. I will quickly read the first couple of sentences from a book that was probably, I would say, the beginning of my awakening. The book was called The Biggest Con, and it was shown or loaned to me in 1979 by a college roommate who said that his economics professor assigned it to the class to read. So again, The Biggest Con, How the U.S. Government is Fleecing You, Chapter 1. Here we go. Money has ceased to exist in the American economy. Conventional wisdom notwithstanding, the average American literally has no money in the bank, no money in the stock market, no money in his wallet or purse. Preposterous, you might say, but it's true. U.S. politicians cooperating with international bankers have conned all citizens out of their money. This monetary swindle was perpetrated despite a reasonably literate electorate, our well-developed financial and banking institutions, and despite many institutions of higher learning and our nation's extensive network of information media. Now, just how did such a thing happen? Answering this question, first of all, requires a quick review of some basic monetary facts of life. That's the beginning paragraph of this book that I highly recommend, called The Biggest Con, that I first came across in 1979. Now here, I will quickly read two or three other sentences, and then I'll be done, and I appreciate my time today. This is from an article that I have on my desktop that I actually modified and edited, but this is the first paragraph. Here's what it says. Most Americans have no idea that the U.S. government once issued debt-free money directly into circulation. America once thrived under a debt-free monetary system, and we can do it again. The truth is the United States is a sovereign nation and does not need to borrow money from anybody. Back in the days of JFK and before, Federal Reserve notes were not the only currency in circulation. Under JFK and at various other times in the past, a limited number of debt-free United States notes were issued by the U.S. Treasury and spent into circulation by the U.S. government without adding any new debt. In fact, each bill said United States note right at the top. Unfortunately, United States notes are no longer being issued today. If you stop right now and pull a dollar out of your wallet, what does it say at the top? It says Federal Reserve note. Normally, the way our current system works is that whenever a Federal Reserve note is created, more debt is also created.
Paul, you've been wonderful. You're exceeding your time limit. Not surprisingly, Jack, you get the final word here today. Jack.
Thanks.
Thank you, Paul, for the compliments, and your contribution was also very, very good. Listen, last thing I want to say is a total subject change. There's a new book out called The Contagion Myth, written by Thomas S. Cohen, M.D., and Sally Fallon Morrell, Why Viruses, Including Coronaviruses, Are Not the Cause of Disease. I want people to pick this book up. It's important for their life. And also, there's a wonderful chapter in there correlating the number of things that were called coronavirus where people apparently died, and the rollout of 5G. I think that's an important thing going forward with this 5G directed energy weapons that may be something that we all have to look forward to, especially after we've gotten through this vaccination crisis. Otherwise, I have to say, Jim, that I always enjoy a conversation with you. Your mind is, as I say over and over and over, remarkable. Your memory is unbelievable. And your concerns and your dedication to America and its people are something that I feel is your national treasure. So I appreciate you asking me to be part of this, and I continue to look forward to the next time we get a chance to talk.
Well, you've been wonderful, Jack, and Paul, too. And I just reiterate what you mentioned. You alluded to Deagle.com, which projects a diminution in the U.S. population from 2020 at 330 million. To less than 100 billion in 2025. That's just 5 years from now, my friends. Pay attention to what's going on. Major developments in the next couple of weeks. We're going to see who is the real Donald J. Trump. I repeat, I conclude, although I'm an agnostic, I feel the nation, the fate of the nation is at stake. And I say, God bless America and God bless Donald J. Trump.
Hear, hear, Jack.
Revolution.